Welcome to the Million Vegan Grandmothers podcast. And today I'm so honored to have Dr. Alan Goldhammer from True North Center. He's a chiropractic and I think a naturopathic doctor. And he has written some incredible books, has supported people from what maybe is uncurable disease back to complete health sovereignty. And this is done through, aligning ourselves with food as medicine and our health, our spine, of course, because that's what you do, and letting go of the old paradigm of the old stories we used to tell ourselves and the games that we play into truth, coming back to truth. So thank you all for being here.
It's my pleasure.
Great. Yeah. So I would love if you'd start just a little bit about how you began your health journey and how you were inspired to open True North, which I've been to once, and I did a juice fast and I tried to go into a water fast, but I wasn't emotionally ready yet, obviously, because that's a whole other ballgame. And then some of the amazing new stories that you've seen in your wellness journey of supporting people back to health. Thank you.
Sure. Well, we've been doing this a long time. True North Health was founded in 1984. So we've been doing this for 40 years. We've had
40.
25,000 people come through and undergo fasting at the center. We do fasting for anywhere from 5 to 40 days on water. And we also help people with more modified versions of fasting in terms of intermittent fasting and juice fasting and things of that nature. The original concept was that health itself had a cause, just like diseases have causes, health has causes. And the cause of health was healthful living. And it was diet, sleep, and exercise that were critical components in helping people achieve and maintain optimum health. And so our focus has always been trying to teach people the things that they need to do so that their body can heal itself and get well. And we've also found that, the reason people are not healthy in modern society, are many fold, but one of the dominant reasons is people eat too much. And so they get fat, and part of that fat that they gain is visceral fat. And visceral fat actually produces inflammatory products like IL-6 and TNF alpha, and it increases acute phase reactive proteins, and it leads to certain diseases, cardiovascular disease, diabetes, autoimmune disease, and some forms of cancer. And so most of the people that are sick and suffering, dying around us today are there at least in part because they got fooled into eating too much and gaining too much fat, in particular, gaining too much visceral fat, which acts kind of like a tumor when you think about it. Visceral fat is the kind of fat that accumulates around the belly and in the organs, has very different properties than normal adipose tissue. And so it turns out that one of the most efficient ways of preferentially mobilizing this visceral fat is fasting. Fasting breaks down tissues in the body in inverse proportion to their needs. So, for example, if you go on a fast for 2 weeks and lose 20% of the total fat on your body, you might lose 50% or more of the visceral fat. So, in other words, it's not linear, it's more geometric in terms of how it's mobilized, in part because visceral fat really shouldn't be there. And the body will get rid of that before it'll get rid of other tissues that may be more critical to the body, like lean tissue. So that same fast where somebody might lose 50% of their visceral fat, they'll only lose about 4% of their lean tissue and none of their bone mass. And then when they recover from fasting with proper refeeding, they'll regain their lean tissue, the water, fiber, glycogen, and protein, but they'll continue to lose fat. And so basically, we're using fat to help people transform their body composition, reduce the visceral fat, eliminate the things that cause the inflammatory related diseases. And that's how we've been able to publish so many papers in peer-reviewed journals looking at the effect on high blood pressure, on diabetes, on diseases like rheumatoid arthritis and ulcerative colitis and asthma and eczema and psoriasis, et cetera. Because this process is a very natural process of giving the body a chance to unwind those diseases.
Perfect. And there's so much on fasting now. There used to be this big fear around not eating. We used to see, eat
Yeah.
to get well. And we know it's the opposite, right? Dr. Zach Bush,
Well,
I studied with him for a while, would say, that's why when people go into the hospital for an operation, they can't eat for 2 or 3 days. That's why they maybe get better. It wasn't the operation, it was when they stopped eating.
people have been afraid naturally of fasting, in a natural setting of our ancient ancestors, this was an environment of scarcity. Getting enough to eat and avoid being eaten was kind of the biological imperative of life. And most people didn't do it. They were not successful. They did not live to reproduce. They died from predation, from infection. They died in infant mortality issues. And so it's natural that you would be worried about getting enough. In fact, that's an overwhelming concern of human beings, getting enough to eat. And so in this modern world, the last couple of years since the Industrial Revolution, we've had this environment of abundance where people can get too much to eat. Very unusual. It used to be the only people that got these diseases of dietary excess, like heart disease and diabetes, were people called kings, because they were the only ones that could eat the highly processed foods and get excess caloric intake to cause the disease. Now, everybody's living like only kings might have lived in the past. And as a consequence, 72% of people were overweight or obese. This is a massive epidemic. It's so common, we don't even recognize it. But even in our generation, if you think back to schooling as a youngster, it would be very rare for people to be obese in school. There might be one or two kids in the class that were obese, and they would actually, have some social pressure because of it. Now it's one or two kids that are not obese, and oftentimes they're having child services called, if their parents are feeding them a vegetarian diet or something like that. So we've seen a huge turnaround to the point where being overweight is become the rule rather than the exception. And in fact, we have social consequences. We say, well, it's not nice to suggest to people they need to lose weight because that's blaming the victim. And in reality, even in our most recent epidemic with COVID, one of the big risk factors for dying from COVID was obesity. But you rarely heard that being acknowledged through public health, educational measures. They focused on everything else, but not the elephant in the room, which was people eat too much, they have too much fat, too much inflammation. And that makes us vulnerable to dying from everything, not the least of which is COVID-19 infection. So I think we need to get really serious. And we also don't understand, we think, oh, it's psychological issues. Mommy didn't love us enough. Daddy loved us too much. We had stress. But the reality is that it's biological reasons that are the dominant factors of obesity. It's people fool their brain satiety mechanisms with chemicals added to their feed. And the chemicals that we put in food for animals or people that make us fat is actually SOS, salt, oil, and sugar. Salt, oil, and sugar is not food. It is chemical, hyper-concentrated byproducts of food that are added to food that stimulate dopamine in our brain in a drug-like way, just like cocaine and alcohol and methamphetamines. The reasons people become addicted to these substances is these are artificial stimulations of dopamine. When you stop doing that, you feel really bad, which is kind of the hallmark of addiction. People are doing something to feel good, and if they stop doing it and then they feel really bad, they have to do it again. And that's the same thing that's happened, unfortunately, with our feeding processes, where salt, oil, and sugar become dominant components of energy. People are eating 150 pounds a year of one of those chemicals called sugar that has absolutely no normal relationship to the human diet. Hyper-concentrated sugar shouldn't be the dominant force of the diet, but they are. And that's one of the reasons why we're having the problems we do. Oil is another one. You need fat just like you need carbohydrate, but you don't need to add oils to your food. You don't need fried foods in order to get the essential fatty acids you need. And salt is also an example where, again, sodium is an essential nutrient without which you die, but there's all the sodium you need in whole plant foods. You don't need to add salt. In fact, salt used to be such a precious commodity before we learned how to process it. It was used as a means of exchange. I mean, the term salary itself came from those early origins. So we think of salt, oil, and sugar as critical components of our diet. And although they're dominant components, they're not health-promoting components. And that's why we advocate a whole plant food diet that's SOS free. SOS obviously is the international symbol of danger, but it also stands for salt, oil, and sugar. And when you do that, you get all the protein, essential fatty acids, nutrients you need, but without the dietary excess that leads to fat and visceral fat and disease and debility. And we've laid this out in our book called The Pleasure Trap, which is, a very detailed explanation of why it is people have such a difficult time losing weight and keeping it off because of these factors.
Well, it's interesting, when you're talking about looking for stuff outside of ourselves, that pleasure outside of ourselves, that quick hit, that quick, fix. One of the very first things I read when I became a social worker, the number one thing with addicts is the inability to delay gratification. And that's what the food has done. It has made us very addicted very quickly. I mean, that first bite of a chip makes you want the whole bag. And so again, when you're talking about the SOS free diet, you're looking for something outside to add in instead of like celery. Celery is incredibly salty, but it's got the right amount of minerals in it to balance out everything and to help it digest with the fiber and the natural sugars in food and the natural fats in a walnut, that's helpful for our brain instead of like just going to clog up our blood system. So thank you. And again, our upcoming convergence on the 27th of April, the theme is the stories we tell, the games we play, the stories we tell. And this is a pretty big story we hear. I'm sure you've heard it many, many times about people feeling, well, I would be deprived. And you're like, no. Like life isn't about putting a bunch of additives in our body. That doesn't deprive us. It gives us actually deeper access to what life is about, right? Love and service.
Cigarette smokers, alcoholics, drug addicts will tell you sometimes they'd rather die than give up their addiction. And I mean, and they do. But the reality is, if you talk to an alcoholic that's become sober, they don't say, "Oh yeah, no, my life was a lot better when I was drunk." No, they recognize that at the time that they're trying to withdraw, it's the most difficult thing they're ever going to do. And if you explain to people that are overweight and d dying needlessly and suffering from the consequence of dietary excess that they have to give up salt, oil, and sugar, at first it's very difficult. It's one of the most difficult things people are ever asked to do. But the people that get free of the addiction don't then feel that the quality of their life is diminished. It's quite the opposite. And one of the things we do is we use medically supervised water-only fasting to help make that transition easier. Just like some people can quit smoking or drinking on their own, some people need a little bit of help. Some people can quit eating salt, oil, and sugar on their own, but some people need a little bit of help. And the True North Health Center is a facility that specializes in medically supervised fasting, which is a way of creating an environment that where people can safely make this transition from addict to not being addicted to their dietary issues. And that can be very helpful for people. And particularly for people that are, suffering with diseases, they're on medications, that transfer to where you get healthy and you don't need the drugs anymore can be a little tricky.
Well, and the power of support, when I was, it's interesting, a few things that you said. The first thing that I thought about was people being overfed, but actually underwatered. So I specialize in hydration when I work with people, and people are incredibly dehydrated, and it's, one of the number one markers for, how much inflammation we're going to have and how healthy we're going to be. So what you're doing is you're taking away all the things that dehydrate people incredibly. And you're just adding water that helps hydrate the system and concentrating on, getting rid of all the dehydrating lifestyle. But also, I know that you do have psychology support at your center, and that's really big. As a person who grew up with a lot of food addiction around me, like many of us, it there is an emotional component when you're in the really raw state of releasing, and that support, being at a center, having a friend with you is critical. When I was dying of Crohn's and I went to a wellness center to be supported, I went to Hippocrates Health Institute at that time, and just to have the support to get me into those 3 weeks of completely unplugging from everything that wasn't going to heal me gave me enough time to say this is the way out. People would come in wheelchairs, arthritic so bad, and they would walk out. I mean, the body is a self-healing organism. It's so exciting, right? I'm sure you find it very exciting to teach people how quickly we can heal when we stop putting in the things
Yeah,
that
there's many conditions that are basically caused by dietary excess, and those conditions tend to respond often very rapidly. And so, that's what we tend to focus on, people that are going to get well quickly and make us look good. So, there are conditions that have nothing to do with diet and lifestyle change, and those are going to not necessarily be as responsive. So we tend to focus on the conditions that do respond to changing diet and lifestyle. And those are, it turns out, the leading contributing cause of death and disability. It's your cardiovascular disease, hypertension, diabetes type 2, autoimmune diseases where the body's immune system itself is attacking itself, the rheumatoid arthritis, the ulcerative colitis, the ankylosing spondylitis, the asthma, the eczema, psoriasis. These conditions are where your body's own immune system is thrown off by, at least in part, gut leakage that's triggered by oxidative damage secondary to poor dietary choices. So when you correct the cause, the body heals itself and we can manage the condition long term successfully.
Yeah, awesome. Well, as one of the members of the Million Vegan Grandmothers, we really see a dying planet in front of us that is interconnected to our food system, the demise of our planets, the demise of the species of the children, the grandchildren of all species. And what we're seeing more than ever, as you said, when we were young and in school, we very seldom ever seen an obese person, but we're seeing it all the time now, and it's becoming the new norm. Like you said, it's not cool to tell somebody, maybe they're getting a little bit too heavy. But I knew when I got quite thin, because I stopped eating for a while to heal Crohn's, and it worked. I really stopped eating for a few months. I basically drank green juice and water for a while. And I remember my family feeling very comfortable about telling me that I looked really thin, that I looked anorexic, but I was like, no, I'm going to rebuild later. But I finally looked at them and I said, what am I in a cult? I said, you guys are all unhealthy and I'm getting healthy and you're on medication and you think you have the right to, this is a cult. I'm sure this is a cult. So we kind of live in a cult. And as we unplug from that cult, we're actually showing our children that there's a different way, and it's reciprocal, right? It's releasing this crazy animal agriculture, and it's releasing human suffering. Human, earth, and animal liberation really is what
What's
it's
going
about.
on right now is people get away with this dietary indiscretions for a while, but the last 20 years of life ends up becoming unnecessarily debilitating. So people are spending the last decade or two unable to talk or move, sometimes lying in nursing home beds waiting for people to change their diaper. Instead of maintaining autonomy and becoming continually productive and making the last 20 years the richest and most enjoyable part of life, they oftentimes become the worst part of life. And so what we're about is trying to teach people that you're not going to live forever, you're going to die. But how well you live, your healthy life expectancy, is going to be largely determined by what you put in your mouth and how you live your life and use your body. So the idea is to stay healthy so that not only today you feel better, but you can actually continue to be a productive member of society till you reach your genetic potential, go to bed one night and don't wake up, rather than spending years or decades debilitated and dependent on those people around you.
Yeah, how many people reach their genetic potential?
Well, it's interesting when I look at a lot of these doctors that practice natural hygiene and have been living healthily, and they often practice into their 80s or 90s, and they often have a very short window of debility to where they literally go to sleep and don't wake up. So they have good lives and they have good deaths. So the people that have been practicing this way a long time often do very well, both in life and death. I remember my mother, when she turned 92, she had been adopting these dietary principles, and she said she had outlived all 50 of her lifelong friends. They were all dead, including the ones that used to make fun of her son's crazy diet that she was on. And she said it became more and more difficult to make friends as she got older, because even people 10 years younger than her were still too debilitated in order to engage in the behaviors that she liked, playing bridge and whatnot. And she said, "Alan, you have to warn your patients that if they're going to insist on doing this type of a diet, make younger friends." And she said, "Not just a little younger, a lot younger, or pick a couple that are health conscious so there'll be somebody left at the end, because it gets harder to make friends when you get old. So make younger
Wow.
friends."
Wow. I love it. Or just hang out with my grandchildren all the time. Yeah. So for our listeners that don't know what natural hygiene is, when I studied quite a bit of natural hygiene, and it's like the body, the root cause is really toxicity, right? And over acidification and leading to extreme inflammation. We're not just haphazardly, victims of disease. The
Well,
body has a
hygiene
natural
is by
hygiene way
definition the science of health. It's about what do you do to cause health? And health is caused by diet, sleep, and exercise. So, you got to get enough rest so the lymphatic system can be flushed so you don't end up with dementia and Alzheimer's. If you allow oxidative damage to occur by sleep deprivation, more and more brain damage occurs, and you're more vulnerable to those dementia type diseases. Rats, for example, that are given a wheel in their cage and exercise tend not to develop dementia. Whereas genetically bred rats, everything else identical, including their diet, will become demented as they age. The rats with the wheel don't. It turns out when you exercise, it increases BDNF, brain-derived neurotrophic factor, which is a chemical that protects the brain from the damage, oxidative damage from dietary issues and environmental issues. And so exercising is an important part of not getting dementia. And the other thing that increases BDNF, interestingly enough, is fasting. So people that are fasting every day, which is what we advocate for 12 to 16 hours, that is, don't eat 3 hours before you go to bed at night, delay your breakfast so you've got a chance to do a little exercise in the morning. These are people that are going to be much less likely to have oxidative damage in their brain and develop cognitive decline. People that don't exercise, that eat a high oxidative damage diet, don't have the benefits of fasting, are going to be much more vulnerable. And we're seeing that geometrically increase in our society too, the incidence of patients having dementia-related diseases. And it's happening at earlier ages, unfortunately, as you know, we're starting poor dietary choices with our children rather than waiting until they're older to start abusing them. And so, you know, if people are serious about staying healthy, you have to be prepared to pay the cost, which is healthful living. And sleep and exercise are obvious. The other thing is diet. We advocate a whole plant food diet that's free of salt, oil, and sugar. So it's a fairly radical diet. Radical comes from the word radicus, or root, or cause. And so we believe it is a radical diet because it's dealing with the cause of the reason people are prematurely aging. So you want to age at a normal rate, not a facilitated rate. You know, you can see premature aging very obviously in smokers. They get what's called smoker's face, because they get that premature wrinkles are nothing more than cross-linked collagen tissue. It's damage from oxidative damage from the cigarette smoking. Well, it doesn't just affect your face. It obviously affects the inside vessels of your blood vessels too. And that's why smokers die at such a high rate of cardiovascular disease, because they're causing oxidative damage inside their blood vessels. In a way, smoking could be thought of as protective of lung cancer, because only 20% of smokers ever get lung cancer because they die from heart disease before they live long enough to grow their tumors. I wonder if they could make smoking more dangerous and everybody died from a heart attack and nobody lived to get lung cancer, would they be able to advertise smoking as cancer safe? I don't know. The bottom line, though, is if you want to get healthy, you have to live healthy. And then people say, well, can't I have a little bit of cigarettes or a little bit of alcohol or a little bit of coffee? How about a little bit of meat or a little bit of oil, a little bit of chocolate cheesecake? And so, you know, the truth is everybody has different genetic potential. Some people can get away with a little more than other people do before it becomes obvious. But what would be a better solution is saying, instead of saying, how much can I get away with, why not just adopt a health-promoting diet and lifestyle and get used to that? And then you don't have to worry about what your biological thresholds are, and you can avoid the whole thing altogether. You know, that's one way to look at it. Other way to look at it is, you know, live fast, die young, and hopefully you get hit by a truck and don't have to be debilitated at the end of your life.
Yeah, it's not a funny matter, but it's funny when you kind of put it that way, you know, because it's the thing is, I think that when people are caught up in the pleasure trap, they don't know they have a choice. And that's the thing.
Absolutely.
They haven't sustained a long enough abstinence from it. You know, I was in a 12-step group for many, many years, over 20 years. And it's, yeah, absolutely. Alcoholics don't come in there and say my life is so much worse since I quit drinking and confronted myself. But what I've often seen, and this isn't, you know, a bash against, you know, alcoholics, it's not just saying, but then so many of them are just guzzling coffee and smoking cigarettes that they all look, a lot of them
Well,
look
because
pretty
it's
bad.
all the pleasure trap. They're just trading one pleasure
All
trap
the,
for, but and
yes.
granted, coffee and sugar is still going to kill you, but it takes longer than alcohol. Alcohol is a more powerful stimulant. So, you know, I understand the transition that people are trying to make. The best transition is obviously to give up everything. That's what fasting essentially is you give up all these addictions, recalibrate your body like you would a hard drive that's, you know, corrupted, and you turn it off, you turn it on, you don't know why, but now things start to work better. And you know, alcohol is a good analogy, because if you go up to an alcoholic that's practicing alcoholic and you say, oh, you know how your life sucks? It's because of your alcohol. The alcoholic doesn't go, "Oh, it's the alcohol? I had no idea. Oh, thank you so much. I just won't drink anymore. I mean, that's great." They say, "Mind your own effing business," because, they don't want to have to hear it. And once they get free of the alcohol, okay, fine. The same thing with food. You can't go up to an overweight person and say, "Oh, see how big you are? It's because you're fooling your brain because you're an addict." And they're going to go, "Oh, I so much appreciate your advice. I will adopt a whole plant food SOS-free diet. I'll be forever indebted to you for your service." That's not likely how it's going to come off. So, it's just like in alcohol, if you're going to have a successful person, they're going to have to make the decision themselves. They may need support, they may need encouragement, but they've got to decide, that they're willing to do what it takes to get well. And it's not easy. It's not easy to quit alcohol or smoking. It's not easy to give up caffeine. It's certainly not easy to give up salt, oil, and sugar, particularly in a society that's designed to give you what you want, not what you need. And what's really cruel, at least if you're an alcoholic and you quit, most people, and you say, "Oh, I can't drink because I'm recovering alcoholic," maybe they'll tolerate that. They won't be cruel to you. But if you're struggling with addiction to salt or oil or sugar and you decide you're not going to eat whatever food they're eating, they're going to be offended. They're going to, "Oh, where are you going to get your protein from? A little bit's not going to hurt you. You think you're so good with your perky smile and your skinny clothes." And they'll be angry and upset and oftentimes actively try to undermine your success. And so, just like we don't tell alcoholics, once you quit drinking alcohol, what you should do is go get yourself a job as a bartender. That's the job you should have. Go work in a bar 40 hours a week. What we usually try to do is get them to create a little distance between them. And sometimes they even have to get new friends because some of their friends, you don't, if you're an alcoholic, you don't need all your friends to be sober, but you need them to at least tolerate the fact that you are. You need them to not actively try to undermine your success so that they can feel somewhat less bad by comparison. So you don't need all your friends to be on plant-based healthy diets, but you do need friends that'll be supportive of you trying to do the right thing, even if they're not yet ready to do the right thing. And that's fine. And unfortunately, with dietary issues, you will find people actively trying to undermine your success. And also some of it's well-meaning but misguided. They really think if you got in a plane in New York and you flew all the way to California, you would die over Colorado if you didn't eat those pretzels. They would think that you would just starve to death and be dead. And they really think if you don't eat that greasy, slimy, dead, decaying flesh every day, you're going to get protein deficiency or have some kind of problem. So they're well-meaning but misguided. And your job isn't to educate them. It's just to try to live your life and, hopefully minimize your stress as best you can.
Yes, hallelujah to that. Do you see a lot more people looking for answers and changing? Like we announce that we're vegan. We're very open about that. I have this constant debate with my grandchildren because their father likes to let them know that vegans can't be strong. So we watch videos. And then one day, my grandson, who's 7, wanted me to arm wrestle with his mom, who lifts heavy weights, and she's not a vegan. And I didn't really expect to be able to put her down, and I'm twice her age. And I was just like, and I was like, well, that was kind of nice of me.
I like Game Changers because it showed some of the top athletes in the world that they can eat plant-based diets and still function at a very high level. That was, I think, a good movie,
Well, really improve. Really, really improve. Like Dotsie is a very big part of our community, and how much she improved just ditching the dairy, and how she just wrote a letter on behalf of the grandmothers to support some of the grandmothers that are trying to get milk alternatives in school.
You know,
And
it's a
so
big problem for grandparents because many of my patients or grandparents see their grandchildren suffering needlessly because they're being given dairy. So they're having problems with type 1 diabetes, they're having trouble with asthma and acne, which are all massively
ear infections.
chronic viral ear infections. And so they want to help their grandchildren because they're these loving, caring people, that are trying to do the right thing. And yet it creates a lot of stress because maybe their children aren't ready to adopt those things, or maybe they've been convinced that, oh, if their child isn't given cow pus every day, they're going to end up suffering. And so you have well-intentioned but misguided people, and it's really a tough road to walk because you can really alienate your, compromise your relationship and create some alienation if you're not careful. It needs to be done really carefully. One of the strengths in our book, The Pleasure Trap, is Dr. Lyle, our clinical psychologist, has talked a lot about strategies about how to go along and get along and how to be true to yourself, but without necessarily pissing everybody off around you. And those strategies work really well, but it does get difficult, particularly when you're dealing with people that you love and you care about. And so but you have to be very careful navigating that pathway. And mostly the advice is setting a good example until people come to you with questions and answering only what's asked. I have a lot of parents and grandparents that have me talk to their kids and children about these health issues so that they can kind of stay out of the loop a little bit. And sometimes that's really good advice because you don't want to be providing information for people that are not ready to hear.
Yeah, and they can't often hear it from their parents, even at a certain age. And so the majority of the questions that are asked my way, with me trying to maintain a little bit, I do two things. I take care of my grandkids fairly regularly. And my rule is there's only vegan food, whole food, vegan food when we're together, which is really fun. I mean, I've had my grandson since before he could walk sitting up on the counter helping me make green juice. And they're a lot of fun with that. They have their own smoothie recipes. But it's my grandkids that ask me the most questions. And I remember the first time my son-in-law coming back to me quite angry. And I just said, no, I didn't say anything about your lifestyle. I told my grandson when he invited me out for a hamburger that I don't eat cows. He was three at the time. And he thought on that for about a month. And then he went to his father and said, Oma doesn't eat cows. He said, it's not a cow, Oma, it's a hamburger. And I'm like, no, it's a cow, sweetheart. And it's the baby, it's their baby's milk that's on top of there. That's the cheese, and it's supposed to go to their babies. And I don't do that. So now all the conversations are with my grandchildren. I just said, no, you want me to lie to my grandchildren? And my daughter and her husband said, well, no, of course not. And I said, well, I'm not going to criticize your lifestyle, but when they ask me a question, I'm just going to tell them the truth because I want them to know they can trust me. And
I remember when my son, at first he was homeschooled, but then we thought he should be socialized. So we put him in, one of the private schools. I think it was the Waldorf school at that time. And he apparently went to school with his food, and the other kids had their food. And some kids tried to make fun of his food. And he said, well, if you weren't so ignorant, you'd eat like I eat. And he says, besides that, you see that bologna sandwich you have there? That's proof. Your mother doesn't love you. And you're going to die a slow and painful death because you're going to end up with heart disease, because he'd been living at the center. So he saw what happened to people. And so the kids were going home crying to their mothers, you don't love me. I'm going to die. And, so I get a call from the principal saying, you have to do something about your son. He's terrorizing the other children by telling them they're going to die from eating bologna sandwiches. And of course, I was like, well, he was kicked out of the Waldorf school. He was kicked out of the Montessori school. He spent most of his years doing homeschooling until he eventually got to high school where they kind of had to take him. So it worked out okay. But so you got to be careful what you ask for. So he's, in his 30s now, and he's a hardcore vegan, and he's lived healthy all of his life, and that part of it's getting good. But it does create some social disharmony, especially when they're willing to, share their opinions. So.
Beautiful. And because to them it's just the truth. They haven't been lied to. So they just get the raw truth. And they're so and they're, they say children are in a hypnotic theta state for the first 7 years. They just learn by observing. And that's the deepest type of observing. So thank you for being one of
Yeah.
those parents.
I remember he was in 4-H and he was in dog training, and we had a dog that was, well behaved and did well, and he got some awards in competition. But then one day the kids that were raising the sheep brought some sheep in, and he took me aside. He said, Dad, how are they going to train the sheep? I said, oh, God, no, they're not going to train the sheep. They're going to kill the sheep and eat them. He said, why would they do that? That was the end of that whole thing. He wouldn't go anymore because he just I thought it was a terrible idea.
It's a terrible idea. And to love one and to eat another, it's just absolutely bizarre. I had that conversation with my 5-year-old granddaughter the other day. She says, my friend loves animals. I said, oh, your friend's a vegan then? Hats? And she goes, no, she's not a vegan, but she loves animals. I said, that's interesting, isn't it? That we could love animals, but we could eat other ones. And then she just sat quietly with that for a while. I don't know where it landed, but it's food for thought. Well, thank you so much, Dr. Goldhammer, for this time. And I wondered if you had any final things you'd like to say or anything you'd like to say to the listeners about, when you are doing this big transition and building a brand new body through water fasting, you're actually getting rid of all the cravings and the habits right in the cell tissue, right in the microbes, and then you can kind of start again. So how
Well, I
important it
just
is
say,
for
you got to be aware of the fact this is really difficult because you're dealing not just with the biological tension systems and the social channel factors, but you're dealing with a whole milieu of changes that are going to occur, both physically, emotionally, psychologically. And so you have to be patient with yourself and, one step at a time. The most important things, though, are make sure you get enough sleep and rest, make sure you get some exercise, and make sure you eat as much whole plant foods as you can so there's not much room for anything else.
Yes, fill up with the fiber and fill up with healthy friends. Community is where it's at, and community is where we'll be returning to in the future when we can no longer sustain this kind of lifestyle we're doing. Thank you very much for
My
being here.
pleasure.
Yeah, thank you.